Welcome to Season 7 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to Season 7, Episode 7, and today we are joined by author, speaker, and CEO of LeaderCast, Dwayne Cummings. I know I say this a lot, but I couldn't wait to share this episode because this man is outstanding. His example of leadership is truly second to none, and he shares great stories and examples from his journey that will without question help you on yours. To give you an example, each and every episode I go through and take notes from the conversations. And this particular episode produced not one, not two, but 3 pages worth of notes. And much of the information on the notes, I wanted them to become memory in my own brain so I could speak them as eloquently as Dwayne does. We covered common characteristics of all great leaders that Dwayne's learned from his time, why you should scratch the word failure from your vocabulary, and how being a servant leader will change your life forever. This conversation is powerful, it is real, and it is memorable. So without further hesitation, enjoy my conversation with the one and only Dwayne Cummings.
Just a quick housekeeping item. We've been doing a lot of work and research around what effective leaders do differently. And we've identified 4 leader profiles based on our research. You can find out what leader profile you are for free at learnloft.com/assessment. Are you a ruler? Are you an exploiter? Are you a pleaser? Or are you a welder? Only one way to find out. Well, Dwayne, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored and grateful to be here.
You know, the one thing that really took me by surprise is CEO, constantly elevating others is how you title it. Why constantly elevating others over chief executive officer?
We also say constantly elevating the organization. It's really about my philosophy of leadership, and it's not my original philosophy, but one that I bought into that's just about being a servant leader. So we don't have a normal org chart, so I don't sit at the top and then have all my lieutenants below and all the troops down below that. We turn that upside down, and so I'm at the bottom of our organizational chart, which means I'm here to serve the people that I work with every day, and which means if they're above me, then I need to keep elevating them. So it's pretty practical, actually.
It really is. One of my favorite questions to ask, Dwayne, is before the show to someone that knows you well or works with you, just to get a better understanding of who you really are. And this was your colleague's response about who is Dwayne Cummings. He's a servant leader. He's a servant leader. He's humble. He's always looking out for the interest of others. What does that make you feel like?
Wow. Overwhelmed. That you would also do that kind of due diligence and ask somebody around here, I'm blessed to be with an amazing group of people, and it's not work that I come and do every day. It's definitely a get to, not a have to. So,
well, it's one of the places I really want to start, and we get this question a lot of people moving into new leadership roles and. What do I do first? What do I do in the first 90 days, in the first 120 days? And I think you've been in a new role, CEO of LeaderCast for now 5-6 months. Did you go in starting this new role with some kind of strategy or plan? If so, walk me through your thoughts on how you start a new leadership role.
I was blessed to have already been around the brand. So I knew a lot of the people. I'm in the LeaderCast now library of videos. I co-hosted LeaderCast Labs last year. So I was really familiar with the people. And so that can be an advantage and a disadvantage depending on how you go about things. But for me, I go in with open eyes, open ears, and willing to learn. And so what happens with some leaders is they go in and they just start asking questions. And people don't always respond to that well because they think, oh, my goodness, they're critiquing and they're going to criticize and all those things. And so I kind of show up and observe, and then I really do, and I don't put any job beneath me. So in all the organizations I've pretty much ever been involved with, I do every job in the building. So if that means taking out the trash, or like this year at the Christmas holiday party, my wife and I did the dishes at the end of it. You know, kind of doing every job, sitting with people, understanding, you know, putting them at ease, getting to know them as people too. Like, why are they here? What are their challenges? What do they love? What do they not love? So how can I best serve them, if that makes sense? And if you start from that place of let me best serve you, then I think people will trust you a little better or a little more, and then it allows you to get in there and really bring your gifts and talents and make a difference. But I don't know that I had a 30, 60, 90-day plan. It was kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, well, everybody's got different styles, and I think the fact that you're building that foundation of trust, obviously no trust equals no influence equals no leadership. So the fact that you're starting there instead of a rigid plan, I think it shows a lot of the reasons why you've been so successful over your career. I do want to go back into a little bit of your journey, because I think it's pretty fascinating for those that don't know you, how you've progressed professionally, and I think there's some great lessons there. Take us through a little bit of what that journey was like, and maybe what the best lesson was at each of those kind of entrepreneurial stages.
Sure, thanks. Early on, I was an athlete, and then was a coach, and you know, I coached high school, college, professional. I was an athletic director at a university, and I was a general manager and head coach of a professional soccer franchise. And I was having what most people would consider success as a young person, and candidly, it went to my head, and I thought leadership was about title and about compensation and about, you know, how much you showed up in the news and those kind of things. And I had some different people come along the way, and luckily, you know, kind of box my ears a little bit and say, hey, you're going to mess this thing up. Like, you got a lot of talent, but you're going to get in your own way, and you're going to leave this horrible wake of people that really don't respect or like you. So I got, you know, at every stage, somebody new came in and spoke into my life. And then as I got into the business or corporate world, the same kind of thing, you know, I left athletics because my son, who's just made us a grandfather, or made me a grandfather, he was saying, hey, when are you going to love me and my brother as much as you love your players? That was a deciding and turning moment. So I went into the corporate world, climbing ladder, moving fast, just like always, because, like, you know, you were a professional golfer, I was an athlete, you're very competitive, and you want to win. That's how you think you're going to win. And then you realize, okay, well, you might have got the promotion, but no one wants to be in the room with you. No one really is listening to you. They're only responding or reacting to you because they want to keep their job. And that's not a good feeling. And so then when I started getting out into my own, started the clothing company and started having entrepreneurial experiences like the oil and gas company, et cetera, I just really came into that season where it was about, you know what, just start doing this for the sake of other people and to liberate others and make, you know, bring out the highest good or highest possible good in other people. And then you will truly be, you know, a leader worth following and that person that other people aspire to be. So candidly, I was a turd early on, and I was a very poor leader.
Well, I think, one of the things you spoke about that we get a lot is you mentioned some people came in your life at certain times that really helped you in that journey. Does anybody come to mind, and how did that relationship start? Was it something that you proactively sought out? You know, as Bob Bodine told us, you know, kind of how important it is to have a personal board of directors. Did you proactively seek people out to be that accountability in your life, or did it kind of come to you just by chance?
Well, I think early on, when I'm naive and, you know, ignorant to wisdom, you seek people out that you think are going to give you something, right? So early on in my career, I'm like, ooh, I want to be around that person because they got a bunch of money and they're going to just teach me how to have a bunch of money. Or I want to be around that person because they will get me to the next place. And that was horrible strategy, but it's one that unfortunately a lot of people fall into that pitfall. And so then, you know, I got a little wiser, and I had a man come into my life who is a businessman in Oklahoma City, owns a bunch of companies, and he said, listen, you know, you're not getting this. You need to be serving others. So he started teaching me about servant leadership. You need to pour into others, you need to do this. Don't meet people for what they might give you, but try to find a way to give them something, and then all that wisdom they have, they will just that would just come to you anyway, right? They'll want to give it to you. So he kind of reversed that equation for me. And then when I took over, I went to St. Gregory's University, which is a Catholic institution, to be the coach and associate athletic director. And I was raised, my grandfather and uncles were all Baptist preachers. So it was kind of, you know, weird that I'm going to be at a Catholic institution. And when I arrived on campus, there was a guy named Father Victor Roberts, who is the vice president of academic affairs. And he didn't believe that athletics had any place on a university campus.
Mm.
So, yeah, so right off the bat, we were going to be at odds. But I kind of woke up a little bit and got a little bit of realization in my life that I needed to be a different type of leader. So in that instance, I took the initiative to immediately meet with him and say, you know, I want to learn everything about Benedictine values. And there's an abbey and a monastery on campus. I want to learn about what you do every day. I don't understand the liturgy of Catholicism. I want to understand it and learn it so I can best serve this community. Because the priests that teach and are there as administrators, they live there and they die there. So I had been through watching my grandfather pass, and I had a high respect for elders and wisdom in life. And I explained that to him. And so we began to meet every day, kind of like one of those Tuesday with Maury things. And he just started pouring into me. And before you knew it, we both had come a long way. So I came towards him, and he really came towards us, to the point where he came to every practice. He went on every trip. He traveled with the team. He took the pictures. And not only with us, but then he bought into being, you know, supportive of athletics on the entire campus. So, yeah, that was probably the person that really, really affected me in a way that I went to him and he came to me.
What a story. What's funny is I actually have a brother that's a Catholic priest, and he works in a in Toronto, Canada, and they live and die in their order. So it's an interesting story, some similarities there. But I love the fact that forget the faith background, the fact that you could look in to see that this is different than how I was raised, and I actually want to get closer to it to better understand the culture than get further away from it. And I think there's an important lesson there, because so often people run from things that are outside of their comfort zone, when in reality, that's typically where the most growth happens. Do you agree with that statement?
100%. I mean, we're wired to look for people that look like us, sound like us, you know, our family, our tribe, our community. And most of the time, things that don't look or are like us or talk like us, et cetera, we kind of think is, you know, we should be fearful of, right? Because we just don't know. And I have found my greatest happinesses in life and successes and opening up of my mind have really come when I became empathetic and went around and put myself in the other person's shoes and understood them and understood their culture.
Well, there's a couple places I really want to go because of your background. And one of them is, you know, you mentioned you have a 28-year-old son that just had their first child.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you give or would you give to the young people that, you know, come to the LeaderCast conference or other things about their professional journey? What's kind of the one bit of advice that you really like to give to a young or modern professional about their professional journey?
Well, it's interesting because we're in a different dynamic now. You know, people do use that term millennial. Some people don't like the label. My son doesn't consider himself a millennial. And the thing about this generation now, the younger professionals, is they know what they don't want. You know, when I was being raised, I wanted a bigger house, or I wanted my family to take a vacation. I wanted a job with a pension, whatever those things were. And they're looking at, well, this is what I don't want. I don't want to be tied to a mortgage or work for a company for 19 years and get laid off, or, you know, be in a marriage that I'm not really happy about. I'm just in it for the sake of the institution. And so what I do is just tell them, don't run so far away from things just because you know what you don't want. You also need to balance that out with the things that you do. And I speak a lot about legacy. And it's really hard because I look back when I was in my 20s and I thought, you know, I'm on the other side of 50 now. I thought I was a grandparent old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even relate, right? So sometimes it's difficult to get a young professional to really hear you. So you have to find out what inspires them, what motivates them, what they're fearful of, what their hopes and dreams are. And then you kind of can guide them through that journey of saying, hey, if this scares you all the time and it makes you sick and it doesn't keep you in your sweet spot, then just avoid it. Don't get trapped and don't get stuck. Learn the lessons from other people. And by the way, if this is where you find your greatest joy and your sweet spot, and this is where you can put your gifts and talents and get some compensation, then go find that, right? So, and probably the biggest lesson that people liberated me with was there are only a couple mistakes you can make and not recover from, you know, one being death. So don't be so wrapped up in the word failure and what other people are going to say about you, because it's your journey. And I'm where I'm at today because of some of the things that most people consider failures early on, you know, and I share those with them. I avail myself. And so I think it helps them go, oh, okay, it's going to be okay.
What are some of those, you know, what's one of those failures that you look back to now? I mean, you know, I think it's interesting.
It's actually the first chapter in this book I wrote a year and a half ago or whatever is really about me falling on my face 30 years ago. So the first lesson in the book is honesty and integrity, and it's because I lied about 30 years ago and I lost a job. And it was one that my father-in-law had gotten me, and we had just bought a new house and two new cars, and my world got turned upside down. And it was really all because I made a poor choice and lied, right? So I compromised. And so by me telling young professionals, hey, look, this is where I've been. Like, I've been at the bottom, and I've turned out okay, and that's because I really, you know, faced and was honest about what happened, and I didn't run from it, but I used it to strengthen. When you share those kind of things, I think it liberates other people to go, okay, I don't have to hide. You know, I don't have to be ashamed. I'm going to make some mistakes, but it also doesn't mean total failure. So in our family, we don't even use the word failure because, I mean, we scratched it out in the dictionary when our kids were growing up, et cetera, because it's such a bad label for most people. We just say you didn't get the result you want and, you know, so try something different.
I love that, you know, scratching out the word failure and you didn't get the result you want. How do you then manage yourself, or how do you teach your children, or even the people, let's just go to the professional world now, when you guys don't get the result you want with a lot of hard work of the team, how do you typically then respond to those things with your team?
Yeah, well, sure, there's deliverables and there's consequences, right? And you've got revenue numbers to hit, and you've got a business model to fulfill and a strategy to, you know, implement. But, you know, if we're not getting the result we want, that means we probably need to do something different. And, you know, there's a lot of times where you're really close the first time around, and maybe it was out of your control. There are people that plan perfectly for everything, and then, you know, there's a power outage, or
life happens.
Something happens. Yeah, life happens, right? And yeah. So it just didn't work that time, but it doesn't mean it's never going to work. And, you know, it doesn't mean you set the bar so low that it's easy to walk over every day because you really want to be world-class, but you got to look at the long haul. That's probably the biggest thing is, you know, if you look at everything as one event determines everything about you, then if that one event doesn't go perfectly, then your whole life or your whole existence or your company or whatever is a failure. So we will not actually know if we're a success for years and decades and generations, because we're planting seeds now that could come up a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And out of 100%, you know, maybe 90% of those seeds are going to come up and 10% won't. So we just have to know that we're on the right path and we're doing the right things every day. The daily result might not work out the way we want, but we know the end is going to be fine. Mm.
Beautifully said. There's the other real area I wanted to get in with you is, at this point, LeaderCast, not only, you know, you put on a yearly big time event. I think it's in May. Is that correct?
Yeah. Annually, the LeaderCast live event is May. Yeah. First week. First Friday.
And it's, you know, it's just gotten, it's gotten to be just one of the biggest events in the leadership development space holistically. You've now seen, you know, a lot of leaders and a lot of thought leaders, you know, walk across that stage and deliver a message and try to help transfer some of those thoughts and best practices into the audience. What are some of the commonalities that you've seen in really great leaders in all of your time before LeaderCast and then up obviously until today?
Well, you know, we also have the LeaderCast Now library, which got like 150 to 170 leaders in it. And so, as you said, I've been able to see a bunch of my life. And the one common thing that I think really stands out is when they are giving, right? So they know it's not about them. they're not pretentious. They know, yeah, sure, they might have a title or they might have had some accomplishments. You know, they might have climbed a mountain or built a company or whatever, but they know that all those accomplishments were not for themselves. It was for the betterment of other people, right? An organization or the employees there or, you know, their teammates, whoever it was. They've really come to that place in life where it's like, okay, I'm here to lead, and what that means is making other people better. And so, you know, that culmination of all those people, kind of me seeing that, has made me arrive at the place where my job now is to give myself away, right? To die empty. And I think most of those great leaders have that same mentality. They might not verbalize it that way, but they're giving themselves away.
Who's your who's the most engaging speaker you've ever seen?
Oh, now so you're putting me in a tough spot.
I know I am. I like to do that though, and then maybe you give me three. I mean, I know there's so many great speakers, and you're one yourself, right?
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah, so everybody has things that they like about different people. You know, they're engaging, and because sometimes also the person we see on the stage is not the person I get to talk to in the green room, or you know, because they're delivering the content for the masses, and but you know, from the humility standpoint, there are so many great leaders. But do you know who Bob Berg is?
Yeah, the Go-Giver.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, so that's a book that even when I was coaching college, high school, et cetera, I gave every one of my students, you know, that book. I give people, employees, that book, because he really lives the law of reciprocity and just give, not to get. And he is humble. You know, we've been places where we did events together, and then he's done events, you know, I've heard him speak as a leader. Most people don't think of him as a true, like, you know, John Maxwell, those kind of, you know, Andy Stanley, those type of mm-hmm. leaders. But that guy is constantly leading, and he demonstrates it. And at these events, he'll stand there for an hour afterwards and answer anyone's question, and he'll bus his own table at a Marriott with 500 people in a banquet room. And yeah, he really just demonstrates those type of things. And he's very engaging, and he's an active listener, so you just love being around the guy. And that's somebody a lot of people don't really know about, because he hasn't graced the stage of LeaderCast, for instance. But
right.
you get people that
book,
you know, like,
that book moved me so much. I just loved it. And this is a little bit of a side story, but I'm not a big movie fan, but I was on Sunday, I started watching Happy Gilmore. Roy McAvoy.
Tin Cup.
It was on the Golf Channel, and I for some reason I started watching it, and I got hooked on it. And the main character outside of Roy McAvoy is another professional golfer who, in front of the camera, he's just this amazing guy and giving, and he's giving to children. And then in one scene, you know, he just brushes this kid off, and his kind of true side comes out, and it really stuck to me, because the John Gordon's made a big impact on me, and the energy bus and all that kind of stuff, and I had a chance to meet John maybe 6-8 months ago, and I was so worried that he wasn't going to be who he was in his writing or who he was, you know, in my mind. And he ended up being a fantastic man, and he's come on the podcast as well now. But to hear you say that about someone like Bob, that, you know, he is that way outside of his writing or outside of the characters that he puts in books, I think it's really empowering to people to know that they don't write this stuff just to sell a book. It's who they
are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Molly Fletcher is main staging for us this May. She's, you know, everybody, the ESPN, CNN consider her the female Jerry Maguire. She was a female sports agent when that wasn't popular. She had Glavin and Maddox and Tom Izzo and Doc Rivers and all these amazing coaches and players. And I know her personally as a friend. I've been in her house. I've been with her family. She is the real deal. Like, you just get lost in a conversation with her. She's always looking out for the best interest of other people. Sure, she has books and she does speak around the world and all that kind of stuff, but she, you know, she's just Molly. Right. And she doesn't think she's any better than the next person. She's just trying to be her best self, and she wants you to be your best self. So when you find those kind of people, it's awesome. And we're just blessed that, you know, 99% of the people that we engage with are that way.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's a great example. Make sure to tune people into LeaderCast and
and to the right places if people are interested in attending that event in May. Let's go kind of some of the fun stuff. Are you who you want to be today? If not, you know, what are you still seeking to develop in yourself?
Great question. So there's got to be a balance there, right? Because if I say I'm fully developed, then that means I'm arrogant.
You haven't shared that sign so far, Dwayne. You haven't shared
right,
that sign.
So, well, thank you. So I'm always going to learn. There's 7.5 billion people on the planet. Everybody has a different fingerprint. I got something to learn from everybody because everybody has a different story, right? So, I don't necessarily think I'm content like most people think of content, but I'm sure happy. Like, the kind of the universe lays down for me, the grass all goes in the same, you know, the grain goes with me instead of against. I am blessed that my best friend is my wife. My kids are both boys that are, you know, 20 and up, and they say I love you in public. I got friends and people that I work with here at LeaderCast that it's a joy to get up every day, you know. So I'm in a sweet spot. Like, I'm in a great season of my life, and it's only gotten better every year that I get older. So I just think the journey will keep getting better, but I still have a lot to learn.
Well, it's funny that you just say, you know, it's so interesting. I had a colleague who's a little younger than me ask what my, you know, favorite age was, and I'm 34 years old. But I said, there's no question 33 is the best year I've ever had. Not for me personally from an achievement perspective, but just it felt that age was, I mean, obviously Jesus died at 33, so there's probably something in there. But I just felt it was the peak of everything that I had learned now to a level of maturity and being able to apply it and obviously having kids and married and all these things. It was just peak age. And again, I've never asked this question, but I thought of it when you said, you know, you're in your 50s and this year is so good. What's been your favorite age? And is it now? Can I look forward to being, you know, early 50s?
Yes. So first you can look forward to it. You know, in 97, I was blessed to coach the men's and women's soccer team in a national championship game on the same day. And I really thought like that was the pinnacle. Like when that day ended, I thought it will never get better than this. Although the women won and the men lost, it was still like
one title. You know, one title out of two is not bad.
Yeah, but I seriously thought like that is the day. And then, you know, when we sold the oil and gas company, I was like, it doesn't get better than this. And then when my first book got published, it was like, okay, this is beneficial. So then I finally just started realizing, like, stop worrying about that and just make sure that tomorrow or today is a little better than yesterday, right? And tomorrow will be a little better than today. And in my mind, and always people that are up in years will say this, I don't feel older in my mind, right? So my mind is just as sharp, and I have more wisdom now than I did when I was in my 20s, 30s, or 40s. Sure, I have a few more aches and pains. I'm not going to get out and play 36 today without having to put some ice or Bengay on. But
I'm impressed. You know, you still like to play 36.
Yeah. But the truth is yes, you should be hopeful that your years ahead of you can be better than you would have ever imagined or ever dreamed.
It's so encouraging to hear. It really is. I mean, because I really do think people almost get sad when they think about aging. You know, I'm still young. But with that mindset, with that positive and optimistic mindset and knowing that your life is just trying to get better the next day and not worrying about a number, it's so encouraging for people, even young people. I told a story this week about a friend that I lost that he died at 19 in a car accident. And for, you know, 14 years now, I've thought about him nearly every day. The fact that he didn't get to experience some of the things that I've gotten to experience with kids and marriage and professionally and working with people that I love. We're just not guaranteed tomorrow. And I just think your perspective there is just one that should be shared.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm humbled.
Are you – I want to go to two more places. One is you mentioned your kids a couple times, and one of my favorite questions to ask is what's harder, leading at home or leading at work?
I don't think they should be different, candidly. I think that's one of the characteristics of a great leader is you're congruent, right? So you don't I don't step in here and say, okay, today I'm the CEO at LeaderCast and I have to behave this way. And then I go, well, at home I'm the leader of my family and I have to behave this way. I think inconsistency is what ruins a lot of leaders, right? So just being consistent and knowing that how you avail yourself or how you show up to people, they can count on that, that it's not some, oh, where's he coming from? Why is he changed here? So leading at home and leading at work are the same for me. Mm. And so I serve my family and look for the, you know, to liberate them and bring out their best good and pass on my wisdom to them. And, you know, die empty, as I said earlier, the same way I do at work, the same way I do with my friends, the same way I do in nonprofit work, the same way I do it to a stranger in the airport. I think you need to be congruent and consistent.
Congruent and consistency. That's perfect. Sounds like you got a new talk, congruent and consistency.
I'm going to have to get, let me tweet this or write this down real quick. No, I'm just kidding.
What's the best investment Twain Cummings has ever made?
Myself, hands down. The only way I'm better for other people is if I'm better for myself. So continuing to learn, read, be coached, be mentored, get away from it all and do some self-evaluation and learning communication skills and just educating myself on business. And the better I am, the better I can be for the world, right? The more other people can count on me, the more I can serve others, or the better I can serve others. So investing, and some people say that sounds selfish, right? Oh, you're only worried about yourself. No. You're making yourself better so you can help other people. It's kind of like when you get on the plane, they say put the mask on yourself before you try to help someone else. So
I think it's an insightful point. The whole idea of servant leadership and what you're doing at LeaderCast, and I think there's one other thing that I've really been impressed by you, and that is many CEOs kind of avoid any social media, social interaction, putting themselves out there at any real, on any real deep or vulnerable level. You tend to go the opposite. Why have you made that decision, and what has it done for you, you know, one way or the other?
Well, thank you for the kind words. So it does a couple things, right? So one is people don't have to guess. Human nature is you get a little bit of information in the front, a little bit in the back, and then you just make up all in the middle. And typically people don't make up good in the middle. So the more information I can let people know about me, sure, they're going to judge me. And they're going to be people that don't always agree with what I do, but at least they don't have to make it up. Like, they just have to determine whether they truly believe what I'm putting out there. Mm. So if I just put constant selfies of me on a private jet or me, you know, holding a champagne glass or whatever, they're going to have a certain interpretation of me. But if I put, you know, like I went to do a talk in downtown Atlanta a few months ago for the organization Year Up, and my car got booted in the parking lot. So, you know, I put that on social media, you know, and it was awesome because the guy that came to take the boot off was amazing and he was really kind. And but that happens. Like I can't give my cold to my assistant and fake that I never got sick or miss out on a flat tire or whatever. So I might as well just be real. Because then what I hope it will do is liberate other people to just be real and transparent. There is this level that people want their leaders to be heroes and infallible. And I just think we're setting ourselves up for such a horrible situation if you think that's the case with all the leaders.
Oh, man. I couldn't agree more. I think one of the biggest lessons I learned early is I wish I learned earlier is that I don't have to be the hero. A lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of founders think they need to come in and save the world themselves. And in reality, it's very much the opposite. I like that idea of not having to be the hero. Well, Dwayne, we are smarter and no doubt better off for having you come on the show. Where can people find out more about you and LeaderCast? And, you know, let's make sure to point people in the right place in the show notes as well. But love for you to kind of tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, thank you for your kind words and gifts. LeaderCast is leadercast.com, so LeaderCast.com. Where you can find anything you want about the live event, the women's event in October, labs, expeditions, whatever. And then most people can find me on DuaneCummings.com, DuaneCummings. I jokingly say I'm Googleable. So if you Google Duane Cummings, you know, you're probably going to get me on Facebook or Twitter or wherever. And, yeah, reach out. I answer. I mean, we have a chief of staff here that sorts things out, and we have a social media manager, but I answer all my own messages, and I try to keep up with everybody on social media.
Well, that's fantastic, Duane. We really appreciate you being here and sharing such great wisdom. It will improve lives, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John. You are doing an amazing job, and you're serving the world in such a great way, and I'm proud of you, and, you know, congratulations on being a fantastic husband and father and 6 years of marriage and the kids, and yeah, you're doing amazing things.
We're just all trying to do our part, man. if we had more people just thinking, you know, what more could you do, the world would be a better place. And so I believe that.
Keep spreading your message. Yeah, keep spreading your message then. I'll spread your message.
Oh, thanks, Duane. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. Again, it's a real pleasure and honor to bring you stories and best practices to help you on your leadership journey. It would mean a great deal to us if you would leave a review and recommendation on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. It helps us reach more people. If you have any feedback or questions, you can reach out to info@learnloft.com. Until next time, be a good leader at home and at work.